This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Welcome to the Mom Room Podcast. My name is Renee Rina, and I am definitely the mom friend you have always wanted. You ready to go?
Ready as I'll ever be.
Okay. So we are doing our book club chat, and January's book was How Not to Hate Your Husband After Kids by Jancy Dunn. This is good timing because I just talked to her on Wednesday and it was such a good chat. So that episode will be coming out in the future at some time. The first thing I had to say about this book, and I told her as well, I was like, the title is misleading because it makes it sound like the book is going to be bashing men or husbands. And it's not at all that. It's just as much about her and things that she needed to change and work on as it was about her husband. But yeah, when I had it out in the living room and stuff, Pri would be like, oh, you're reading your husband resentment book over there. And I'm like, that's not what it's about. But it's so hard to say that because the title does sound like that.
It's funny because I never got that when I read the title. And maybe it's because like I have just quite a few girlfriends who, you know, have struggled with in their relationships having kids. And so I took the title as thinking like, holy shit, things are really tough once you have kids. And like, if you want to make your marriage like survive it, like you got to figure your shit out. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, I do have one friend who their husband ordered them the book without them knowing. And it's just and it was like, oh, Jen's reading this book. I think you should read it too.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how I should take this.
That's hilarious. When I told her that, she was saying, initially she had a different title or something, and whoever is in charge of helping with, you know, the covers and the titles mentioned this title. And she was like, really? Are you sure? And she was like, I almost wanted to put a fake cover on front because she was thinking it would kind of turn people off. But yeah. So anyways, it is a good title and I think it's catchy. So
yeah.
But yeah, so basically the book is about her and her husband had this awesome relationship. They're both writers, journalists, and then they had a baby and everything changed for them. So they went from never fighting, being really quiet at home, writing, nice, calm life, and then they had a child and everything changed. And so basically when she started to feel that their marriage was really suffering, what she told me was she was writing, articles for Oprah magazine and all these big places. And she frequently chats with experts in all these different areas about relationships and things like that. And she was like, I would write these articles about, you know, relationships and how to have a fulfilling marriage. And meanwhile, at home, our marriage was falling apart. So she was like, I should do something about this. I have a ton of resources and people that I know that I can go to. So she decided to go on this journey of therapy and trying to change her relationship. And it really worked. And this book is basically taking us through everything that she learned and what they did together to make changes. So it is, I think if someone is struggling in their marriage after having a child, this would probably be a really good book to read.
Yeah, or read before you have your
child. Yes. And she talks a lot about that, about how so many people focus on things that don't matter when you're pregnant or when you're trying to get pregnant, like the color of the nursery and, you know, picking out clothes for the baby, but people don't focus on how it's going to affect your relationship and kind of set ground rules for this is how things are going to be, like, you know, because everything just becomes more difficult. Yeah. So if the mom is breastfeeding and she used to do all these things during the day, like for in the house, like it's not going to happen. So it's nice to kind of think ahead and get things sorted out for sure.
I think sometimes people, even before you have kids, a lot of us will have, you know, either friends or family, and you've seen their relationship change after they have kids. But I think so many people think, oh, that's not going to be me and my partner. You just mm-hmm. think that. And like my husband and I were in a different situation because we're choosing not to have kids. So we're always think like, for me, none of this is shocking, because I'm always like, I look at everyone else I know in my life, and their marriage completely shifted gears after they had kids. Every single couple that I know, like, it's not all bad, but it totally changed the dynamic of their relationship. But because I'm not sitting here thinking like, oh, my relationship is not going to be like that after I have kids, because I'm not having kids, right? So I think like, I have a different perspective of it than a lot of people. I think most people have that rosy picture of like, we're going to be so much better than, you know, so-and-so.
Yeah, like, we never fight. Like, why would we fight? And the thing that I notice, it just happened upstairs. Like, Milo is being such a butt tonight, and he never acts this way. But I start to get, you know, like, flustered. And so you will react in certain situations that are stressful in ways that you never would otherwise.
In different positions that you don't even necessarily think are going to happen until you have a kid, right? Like, these aren't, like, you can't prep for it. There's no training course.
No. So yeah, reading books like this is a good start, I think. And it reminded me of how everyone focuses on labor and delivery and not the recovery. It's the same shit. Like, you're so focused on the short term things that are very temporary and gonna go away eventually. But like, focus on like your pelvic floor, like healing from that properly, your recovery. So yeah, it reminded me of that.
Obviously, you can't, just like you can't plan for a perfect delivery, but you can like make plans and then have like, I forget what you call it, but like your different scenarios in case certain things happen. Like, you can sort of plan for things, right? And so it's same thing like for post, like once your baby is born, like if you have these conversations with your partner ahead of time, then you can help kind of plan for certain scenarios, right? Like, let's figure out like who is going to cook dinners and who's gonna, like, what chores are we gonna kind of divvy up, right? Like, you can have those conversations before life gets crazy,
yeah,
maybe, or before you have your second baby or your third child or whatever, right?
And I think even just getting into a routine of communicating how you're both feeling and when you're stressed out and what you need when you're stressed out, 100%. If you're not used to communicating, it's not just going to magically happen once there's stress involved. So,
but that's always thing, like, if people don't know how to communicate, why are you having a kid? Which is easy for me to say, but
you'd be surprised, Jen. Okay. One thing that I related to so much in the book was when she talked about the research behind why husbands don't wake up as much when they hear the baby. This is my life. And this is why Pri sleeps with the monitor, because he can just ignore the little sounds. I cannot. And I learned that very early on. As soon as Milo would wake up, I'm wide awake and then I can't fall back asleep. Whereas Pri can like briefly wake up and just pass right out again, or not wake up at all unless it's a full blown cry. So yeah, to know, like, she talked about how it could be, or like, they suspect it's an evolutionary thing. So men are more concerned about dangers that are gonna, come for the whole family, whereas the moms are mostly concerned just about the child, and they feed the child. So I was like, that's gotta have something to do with it as well, because, you know, we feed the child, assuming that we're breastfeeding. And I'm sure way back in the day, everybody, like, that's just what you did, because formula is rather new. So if a woman's nipples leak when a baby cries, there's got to be something with waking up as well.
Yeah, I think, and I mean, I've heard from a lot of my friends that, you know, they felt exhausted through the night because they would still sleep with their partner in the same bed. And then if their partner was doing feedings, they would wake up and then they would say, well, I might as well just do the feeding because I'm up anyways. I'm not going to sleep. And then dad, 2 seconds later, is like snoring, like lights out, like deep sleep. And so a lot of my girlfriends have told me that, like, I'm just the one who does all of the feedings because I'm up anyways.
Yeah.
And so you're right. That's probably something like that's just like innate or bio, like some kind of biological factor for women who have just given birth. But there's something to say for like you and Pri, you know, like maybe if you don't want that to happen, then consider sleeping in a different room. If that's
What we did, because I wouldn't sleep. So I would go downstairs where I couldn't hear anything. But another thing that topic made me think about was the phantom cries, which is bananas. And you can hear it. I remember I was in a hotel. I wasn't even in our house. Like Pri was home with Milo and I was in a hotel. I forget where I was, maybe in Ottawa for school stuff, or I don't know where I was. And I'm hearing Milo cry as I'm trying to fall asleep. It's brutal. And when Milo was a baby, like really young, I remember he would be napping in his crib and I would go and have a shower. And the whole time I'm in the shower, I think he's crying, but I can see the monitor
right. And
he's not crying. It's so frustrating. And I wonder if that is evolutionary as well, because it's almost like a signal to keep checking on your child, mm-hmm. You know? And I don't think Pri ever experiences phantom cries at all. Yeah. Anyways, so the nipples leaking. That's crazy. This episode is brought to you by Magic Spoon. You guys know I have been very intentional with what we've been eating lately. I'm looking at protein. I'm looking at sugar content and avoiding things like artificial ingredients or colorings. Milo used to always want pancakes or waffles in the mornings, and now he is getting into cereal, and I'm so excited because Magic Spoon is the perfect option. Their variety pack has 4 flavors: cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. They have 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 to 5 grams of carbs per serving. They're made with wholesome ingredients, no artificial flavors or dyes, and I'm just so happy that he's getting a good amount of protein before he goes off to school. And it's a great snack for me and my husband too, because 13 to 14 grams of protein in the cereal, now you add a high protein milk, you're set. That is such a high protein snack or meal. I should also mention that it is gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. So go to magicspoon.com/momroom to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code MOMROOM at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. So try a delicious bowl of Magic Spoon cereal today at magicspoon.com/momroom and use the code MOMROOM to save $5. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. This episode is brought to you by Little Spoon. I'm just going to be honest here. As a busy parent, it's important to keep your life simple and convenient, especially at mealtimes. Nobody ever told me how stressful mealtimes can be. Little Spoon is one way to help you do just that. Little Spoon delivers fresh, healthy meals and snacks straight to your door that your kiddo will love at every eating stage they are in. Their goal is simple. It's to keep your kid healthy, but also to make it the easiest part of your day so that you can cut through all the drama of mealtime without compromise. Little Spoon's baby blends are fresh, organic baby food from single ingredients to multi-textured purees to take the stress out of starting solids. Their biteables are transition to table early finger food meals that are cut to size to promote easy self-feeding with healthy, balanced foods that are free of artificial junk. Little Spoon's plates are for toddlers and big kids. They taste amazing, and even the pickiest eaters will love them. Think hidden veggie mac and cheese, chicken nuggets, and adventurous eats like pot stickers, gnocchi, and more. Little Spoon also offers smoothies, lunchers, and snacks. Did I mention it gets delivered right to your door? It is so flexible, so easy, and everything stores right in the fridge and freezer. You can check out the menu and change up what you order every single time. The price is right, the quality is unmatched, your kids will love it. It's a huge win-win for your family. So simplify your kiddos' mealtime with 30% off your first order. Go to littlespoon.com/momroom and enter our code MOMROOM at checkout to get 30% off your first Little Spoon order. Another topic that I loved that I've never heard this term before was maternal gatekeeping. I liked how she talked about it in that so many women do this, and it's more so, I was trying to explain to her why I do it. So for example, if we're putting on Milo's training pants or pull-up diaper to go to bed and Pri's putting it up, I always want to check that like the sides are out, so in case he does pee, it doesn't leak everywhere. And it's because I don't think he thinks about that stuff as much as I do, because I'm thinking way ahead. Like, I want to make sure this is good, because if he pees in the middle of the night, I don't want him waking up crying because he got wet everywhere. So yeah, I do maternal gatekeeping all the time. Like the size, like the pieces of his food that he cuts up, like to give to him, I'm always like checking to make sure it's, you know, if I don't think it's small enough, I'll go and cut them again. But I love how she was saying how when we are constantly doing that, eventually they just lose all confidence in what they're doing and just constantly look to you to do everything, or they just stop doing stuff, right?
Because I think also that goes hand in hand with that is like, not only will you, let's say like Pri leaves the room and you just check the pull up, it's people usually make a comment, right? Or like, no, I'll just do it myself or whatever. So it comes with a form of resentment usually. So of course, and no one likes either being told that what they're doing is wrong all of the time, or if it's going to lead to like tension, then people are just going to stop doing it, right? Like,
yeah. And I was like, wow, I never have heard that term before, but I really, really like it.
It also comes into like, it's, I know it's tied, like in the book, does talk about this maternal gatekeeping, but I also feel like it's also tied to a lot of like people just not necessarily always being comfortable also for asking for help. So we just get used to doing everything yourself also, right? So there's probably a bit of both of that where it's like this innate thing where you just want to do it, or like you feel like you can do it better, but then also just not being able to ask for help either. So then you end up doing everything. Like, it's like just a cycle.
Yeah, exactly. So she had a quote on page 50 that says, oh, this is good. So it says, if my wife is fuming that I stand there while she empties the dishwasher, why doesn't she just say, help me empty the dishwasher, instead of banging pots and pans around? So this is like a form of like, would that be considered passive aggression? Like,
yeah, I would say,
yeah, 100%. And these, I just did an episode about communicating your needs to your partner. And like, I made the point that it can be big things, but it can also be tiny little things throughout the day. And that's a perfect example. It's so easy to just say, can you help me do this for one, like a couple minutes, and or whatever it is. They can't read your mind.
Yeah, no.
And that is the biggest thing, is like, nobody can read your mind.
And it's about figuring out, you know, she talks a lot in the book, or maybe I felt like she did, but about divvying up chores and responsibilities too, right? So maybe it's not in that moment you saying like, oh, well, can you unload the dishwasher once in a while? Because that might come across with tone, and it might not necessarily be the moment and time to bring it up. But it's like working with your partner to figure out, hey, maybe you do unload the dishwasher and I vacuum, or vice versa, or whatever. I'm cooking dinner, so that means you do full cleanup and unload the dishwasher tomorrow when it's done. Like, kind of sometimes about also like setting those expectations ahead of time so that it's not in the moment. Because oftentimes I feel like if you're trying to communicate a message when you're feeling annoyed or aggravated, it's not going to come out the way you intended. Mm-hmm. And so it's also about like picking the right time to have these kind of conversations, right? And so maybe it's even like setting that time with your partner to talk about, hey, even if it's like once a month, like let's go over everything and figure out like, are we in terms of household, because it's also not fun. Like, I like to cook, but it doesn't necessarily mean like I am the one in our household who does cook. I do the groceries and make the grocery list. Making the grocery list isn't my favorite part, and figuring out what meals to eat isn't also my favorite part, but it's something that I do because I would much rather do that than, which is, sounds funny, but I don't even like taking out the recycling and the garbage. So I would rather figure out all of our meals for 7 days of the week and figure out the grocery list, do the groceries, then do that chore. But Kevin and I have worked out those household chores between the two of us, right? And so every once in a while, we'll also check in with each other and say, like, is this still working for us, right? Like, you're still cutting the grass and I'm doing the vacuuming, or I'm doing the laundry and you're cleaning the bathrooms. Like, does that still work for our relationship? Because it can change over time too. And so rather than in the moment of me being annoyed that I'm unloading the dishwasher and no one's helping me, it's maybe every once in a while sitting down to say, like, hey, for the month of July, can you be the dishwasher unloader?
Yeah. But also not being shy. If you've had a really bad day or you have a headache or whatever it is, make it known and say, oh, I'll take care of this tomorrow. Or do you want to help me quickly do it? Or can you do it? Like, I'm going to go lay down, you know, like most partners would not want to help you.
And also understanding that, like, it maybe doesn't have to be done that second either.
Oh yes. I tell Pri this all the time. Like, I'm trying to watch Below Deck. Can you fucking wash the dishes tomorrow? Seriously. It drives me insane.
But Renee, do you say it to him like that?
No, I just glare like a death stare across the room. It's funny because this happened just the other night and he was doing the dishes and I literally turned my entire body and I was looking over the couch like this, like staring at him. I had paused the TV. I was like, death stare for those of you who are listening.
You would have done in the 90s and you couldn't pause TV.
I know. Oh God, rage, like actual rage. This is how mad I get when I can simply rewind a show. Can you imagine? Totally. Can you imagine if it was before the time of pausing TV? Like, I would murder. I'd be in jail. Oh my God. So she quoted something from Brené Brown when she was talking about the chores around the house or whatever, and just asking for help. And Brené Brown calls it the story that I'm making up, because, and I've been thinking about this a lot, about how we make up, not only do we not communicate our needs to our partner, but we also make up a story about what they are thinking or what their intentions are. And I loved that, because I think what happens is we make up these stories in our head. If, let's say, if they're not helping us do something, we make up the story and then we look for them to, like, tell us that we're right. Like, this story is correct. When really they could be thinking something completely opposite, or they have no idea what's going on.
Probably more the latter.
Oh, totally. Yeah. What is it? Confirmation bias, which I think a lot of people fall into that. Like, when you're upset about something, you're waiting for it to happen again. Like, I use the example of, let's say your husband wants to play a game all the time. Like, what is it? I was going to say Sega, but no, like Xbox. Yeah. And like, you're pissed about that and you wish you guys were spending more time together. Instead of just saying something.
It's not a real life scenario, by the way.
What is it, a real life scenario?
He loves to play video games, but I never get pissed because I always just get to read my books and take
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm always like, I think you should play video games tonight. Like, if your friends are online, my bath's already like running.
Yeah. That's so funny. But instead of, let's say somebody was opposed to the video games and was wishing, like, oh, we need to spend more time together. Like, you guys spend a shit ton of time together. Instead of just saying something, they will be waiting there for their husband to get home and be like, watch, he's going to go downstairs and he's going to start playing that fucking video game. And like, they almost want their partner to prove them right so that they can be more angry about it.
And talking about it and communicating, and it's a communicating, and like, we've talked about this on a few episodes now, but also like understanding your own feelings is so important. Like, why are you upset right now? Like, it's hard. You can't communicate with someone effectively if you also just don't even understand your own emotions.
Yeah.
So it's so huge. And whether it's like with your partner before you've had children or if it's with your sister, your mom, like we just, communication is so important. And
yeah. And it's also the other person. Do you feel that you can't say something to your partner, you know, cause that's a problem as well. So yeah, I just upstairs, like I was saying, Milo was being a huge butt and he wouldn't let us put his sleep sack on. He was like squirming, screaming, like it was weird. He never does this. And I was getting so stressed, but like I never show it on the outside. But then we were trying to zip it up or something and Pri's hands kept like getting in the way because he was trying to hold down his legs. But at the same time, I'm trying to zip it up. And I was just like, stop. Like I like freaked out and he was like, okay, I'm just trying to hold down his legs. But then I realized that in this moment of trying to get this sleep sack on, when Pri would get stressed, I get angry because I don't want Pri to ever be stressed. Because when he is like the most calm, like the most, like he is my person that I'm almost, like, you know how they say like you co-regulate emotions with someone?
Yeah.
Pri is my person for that. So when I see him getting stressed out, I don't feel comfortable anymore. Whereas like, if he's calm, I can just stay calm, stay calm, stay calm. But when I see him get stressed, and so he was like, what's your problem? And I was like, when you get stressed, I get like flustered and I start to get angry. So, mm-hmm. So just don't have any emotions.
Just be a robot.
Yeah. But I know that about myself.
Funny, we're the same way. Like this is obviously not related to kids, but when McFly was sick, which was our dog, a few weeks ago. And when Kev started to, you know, panic a little bit, then that's when I was like, oh, this is not good. Because normally he's like, no, it's fine. Like, it's not a big deal. But as soon as his tone and his language and stuff and changed, I was like, oh, okay, this is not good.
Yeah, like you're looking for him. You're looking to him for how you should be reacting, basically. Yeah. Yeah. And it's time to give a shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode of The Mom Room and providing me with samples. Thank you, Claritin. Guys, I am starting to come to terms with the fact that I do suffer from allergies. I used to think, oh, I just have really bad sinuses. No, you have allergies. So let's talk a little bit about my symptoms. I wake up with not a stuffed nose, but like I have to blow my nose constantly. So it's like it's producing mucus and I have to keep blowing my nose. It's all itchy. The palate, like the roof of my mouth is itchy in the mornings and I'm trying to like scratch it with my tongue. It's really irritating. And the insides of my ears get itchy. It's one thing to have those symptoms when I'm just hanging out at home. But for example, yesterday I was at book club and my nose kept getting so tingly and itchy and I kept having to go to the bathroom to blow my nose. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. It's designed for serious allergy sufferers. Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. So if you're ready to live life as if you don't have allergies, it's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter or ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
A chapter that I loved was when they went to go see the therapist in Boston, because as somebody who studies psychotherapy or used to, it just blew my mind how this guy does his therapy, like in quotations, because to me, like a therapy is a structured, standardized thing that has been studied and like, you know what I mean? Like, not in the sense that it's structured in what you're saying, but you know, there's phases of therapy, like they know what they're doing. And yeah. It just seemed very, it was amazing. I loved it. Like he just basically told them, you know what I mean? Like it was just very abrupt and very bold. And I loved reading it. And I told her, I was like, do you know how badly I want him to collect data from all, you know, the therapy sessions and couples that he's worked with? And I want to see how effective his method is, because apparently it's insanely effective. So yeah, anyways, I just thought that was a super entertaining chapter to read, but obviously I'm biased because of what I've done in the past. So he says, the therapist says, it's a universal human trait that people want to be shown respect. So negotiators must avoid intimidating, demeaning, lecturing, criticizing, and evaluating subjects. And she put in brackets, like, these are the things that I was doing in my marriage. But I love that because I always think about how there's always tension in mom groups and how moms are not, there's just tension, like with talking about parenting methods and whether you're breastfeeding or formula feeding, like there's always an uncomfortableness and you constantly feel like you're being judged, and you are. And part of it is when we look at another mom, we're evaluating constantly. Mm-hmm. Like we're evaluating what they're doing. What would I do in that situation? Like that's the first thing. And it's like, how can I give her advice on, you know, what she's doing? It's a constant evaluation. And so when I read that quote, I was like, oh my God, yes. Because that's how it feels as a mom when you're talking to most other moms, not all moms, but.
Yeah. And I mean, I think part of that too is like this fact again comes back to communication, but we all suck at being like active listeners, right? Like you're basically listening to people so that you can reply. Mm. So many of us just do that constantly, right?
Yep.
What, even if someone's maybe not judging or evaluating you, if they're just replying with their own anecdote or how they would handle that situation, you instantly feel then like invalidated or that they are judging and evaluating you because they probably weren't really listening to you. They were just waiting to reply to you.
Do you remember the part about he told her every time you're getting really angry and you feel like you're going to lash out, go and say this sentence to your daughter's photo. And it was about, I know that what I'm about to do is going to cause you harm, but right now my anger is more important to me than you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's crazy shit. I like it though.
I thought it was really good too. And I thought, you know, it's really interesting. So in that chapter, he was talking about like their daughter at the time was 6 years old. And I think the beginning of the chapter talks about how they couldn't even find a babysitter, but then she admits that they didn't really try hard to find a babysitter. So they bring their daughter to therapy and basically the receptionist, they put some headphones on her and the receptionist like watches her for their first like session. And so she basically admitted like they basically never spent any time away from their daughter. And so at 6 years old, she had witnessed like countless fights between them. And so he was really saying like that you need to stop doing it. Like don't even have discussions basically at this point because it's so bad. And she has seen like a lifetime amount of arguments between the two of you that you literally need to leave the room. And then if you need to have the discussion, then you both still need to leave the room and have the discussion like somewhere else, right? Like in a different room, in a walk-in closet or whatever. I felt that part was really interesting because it's like, I don't actually my parents got divorced when I was like 12, I think, but I still don't even really remember them arguing. So whether I blocked that out or my parents just didn't really argue in that kind of way, I don't know. But I have lots of friends and family members that argue in front of their kids, and I don't know if I would have ever thought how damaging it could be because I just feel like people do it. And so this chapter made me realize like, oh, they're probably, you know, like kids carry that stuff with them, or then it's learned behavior, and then they're gonna end up in a relationship and just do the same thing.
Yeah.
And also gives you a second to pause, right? Like he was telling her like, make a T sign, like time out. If you don't have, basically comes down to like, if you have nothing nice to say, keep your lips shut and walk out of the room, because you're not going to say anything nice. It's just going to be like verbal diarrhea is going to come out of your mouth, and it's going to be probably abusive language and not really have a point to it, like rambling. So leave the room. And it's such a good point, because like even just walking away literally can diffuse a situation and you think differently. It clears your head. Like even if your spouse isn't going to follow you, which sometimes you don't even want them to, like,
yeah,
that was such an easy thing to do. Just like remove yourself from the situation. It's like taking a deep breath, but like more extreme version of that, right? Like leave the situation and you probably will feel like almost instantly relieved.
Yeah. And I think in the moment, a lot of people just want to make a point, or, you know, like make a point or to win or to put the other person down, or when like, that's not going to help anybody really. So I liked the chapter that was about weekends, and it was something along the lines of, maybe this is an Instagram post I saw not too long ago, but it was something about like, remember when weekends were like, remember when you looked forward to weekends? Because, which I can really relate to, because now weekends for us are probably more work than like during the week. It's very like, we have a routine going, everything is very structured, and you know, we get up, we have coffee, we get Milo up, we get him ready, we go to daycare, I come home, I do work, my husband goes to work, like we have dinner, like we pick up Milo. It's structured. And then the weekend is just kind of like, oh, what's going to happen? Like, we don't know. And obviously right now, because we're in quarantine or lockdown and with COVID, weekends are not busy at all. But she was talking about how busy weekends are with like birthday parties and activities, and it's nonstop just catering to your kids. And I like, I don't remember who it was that she was getting advice from, but they were talking about how weekends need to have physical activity, escape, and then certain people involved. And so her like advice was to plan things out, which we do. After a while, I started to notice that weekends would just go by and I didn't get to do anything that I wanted to do. So now like I make a plan. Okay, this is at least one thing that I want to accomplish this weekend. And I want us to go to the park, or, you know, like things to do alone as alone time, like recharge time, but also things to do as a family. Like, what do we want to get done? And then also she gave advice to say no to things. Like, people just don't say no to things. That there should always be relaxing time, like in your weekend. It should not just be go, 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 go. And what are the parents going to do to recharge, like to make that a priority as well? I thought you would relate to that too. You guys don't have kids, but you guys are so busy. And I know you guys used to pack so much stuff into all your weekends, way in advance.
Yeah, I know. Like, I feel like, you know, it's a bit weird right now with the whole COVID situation, and we're in a lockdown. So I was saying to Kev, like, you know, as hard as it is right now for the social isolation, and I work from home right now, and my husband works out of the house, so it's literally like me 12 hours a day sitting in my house by myself, and it sucks. On the weekends right now, because we're forced to have a slowdown, there's this part of me that kind of likes it, because we're forced in a slowdown. So my weekends are very low key. So I go for a walk, and we cook nice dinners, and we maybe do a house tour, and I read a lot. And that's the first time in our marriage, so the first time in 10 years that that's happened, because normally it'd be Thursday night where one of us is at the grocery store, the other one's packing, and then Friday we work, we get in the car, and we're off, like literally out of town. Like, most weekends we would be either camping in the summer or heading to a ski hill in the winter or something like that, or we have company coming, because
yeah,
we're out of town from our family and everyone wants to come visit, and of course we want to see our family. So, you know, we're usually hosting or we're out of town. So hosting also requires, you know, grocery shopping, cleaning your house. And it's like, go, 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 go. As much as I want this whole craziness to be over with and I want to get back to our normal life, it's also like a forced slowdown, which I like.
I'll just end with this last quote, which was, don't pee on the gift, which meant don't okay something for your partner to do and then make them pay for it after because you are pissed that they went and did it. Don't pee on the gift. So we'll just let everybody know February's book is Born a Crime by Trevor Noah. I am on chapter 8. Are you done?
I feel like there's 18 chapters. So I have 2 chapters left. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I'm half done. Jen's almost done. It's really good. We both got the audiobook through Audible.
Yeah.
We couldn't find it anywhere else, but everybody recommends to listen to the audiobook because he narrates it and he does the accents of his family members and it's really entertaining. And then I will mention March's book is 13 Doors by Aaron Wright. And it's a novel, which is different because we don't have, I think we've only had one other novel. What was it called again? Little Fires Everywhere. I've read a big chunk of that book as well. And I really like it. And I'm not a fan of novels at all. And it's basically about a couple who has a second child and she has, I'm not sure if it's autism. They haven't really said a diagnosis yet in the book. I don't know if they ever do, but she has autism or sensory processing disorder, something. And yeah, it's just them navigating that. And specifically, I think it goes into navigating the school system and how to get the proper supports and whatnot. So far, I really like it. So yeah, that's March's book. And that's all for now.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.